You are listening to BensTorah.com.
This week's parsha, which is parsha Slech Lecha, is perhaps in our history, the history of Klal Yisrael and the world, perhaps one of the most pivotal parshas in the entire Torah. And it's not merely the fact that the Torah talks tremendously about Avram Avinu and Sarai Imenu, but what really makes this parsha unique and distinct is that the parsha that contains the ultimate covenant of significance between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that is the Bris Bein HaBesarim. The historical works of Rabbi Beryl Wine have a theme that he mentions over and over again. And that is that history has a certain divine pattern to it. But if you look carefully, you see the pattern repeated over and over again. In fact, he once wrote one book specifically called Patterns, where he showed certain historical events of Klal Yisrael throughout the generations, each event having a pattern that repeated itself over and over again. There's a pasuk we have at the end of the Sefer Torah that says, Zachar Yemos Olam, that there's a concept of analyzing history from the perspective of the Torah and to understand and comprehend the historical events as they're taking place in the context of the broader context of the history of Klal Yisrael as it's contained in the Torah. The Ramban is famous for saying in his Perush L'Chumis, Mais of a similar bun, but the historical events of Sefer Bereishis will be repeated again and again throughout Jewish history. And when it comes to the Bris Bein HaBesarim, as I'm going to show you tonight, in a very, very restricted analysis, the whole history of Klal Yisrael and its ability to survive all the various types of trials and tribulations of Galus and triumphs of Geula and all the things that happened to us over thousands and thousands of years, all of this is really contained in the divine pattern mentioned in the Bris Bein HaBesarim. And in fact, in the Haggadah, we emphasize a very important fact, that the reason the Jewish people are still around, the reason we still have the ability to survive and to function, to succeed, and have literally had the capacity to survive all the torments of all the major nations of the world and have the ability to go forward and to continue our legacy, while all the great heads of state of the great nations of the past have perished together with their states, and these major, major empires are no longer in existence. All of this is based upon the promises of the Bris Bein HaBesarim. So let me go and now define for you what many years of my own elucidation and evaluation of what Midrashi Chazal say about the Bris Bein HaBesarim, and share with you a very, very interesting divine pattern that the Bris Bein HaBesarim represents, which resulted in major redemptions of the Jewish people of the past, and is actually a harbinger of how the ultimate redemption of Klal Yisrael will take place in the future. So listen carefully as I share with you this insight tonight, and you'll see very shortly what I mean. In the Bris Bein HaBesarim, there are in fact four different parts of this covenant that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made not only with Avram and Sevi Yaakov, but made with Klal Yisrael when it comes to our ability to succeed in our mission and to survive throughout the generations. In the Haggadah we say, in fact, at one point of the narration of the Haggadah, we cover the matzah, pick up the cup of yayin, and say, V'hisha amdol avaseinu, shebechol dar v'dar oimdem aleinu l'chalaseinu, v'hakadosh baruch hu matzaleinu miyadam. So what's the Hisha Amdol Avaseinu? See, the Mefarshim say, look in the context of the Haggadah, is referring to the narrative right before describing the Bris Bein HaBesarim. The Bris Bein HaBesarim is responsible that we have had the ability to survive all the various types of onslaught of the non-Jewish world of trying to destroy us in each generation. And the other nations who tried to destroy us will be themselves destroyed ultimately. All of this is part of the guarantees given to us in the Bris Bein HaBesara. So what are the promises? Promise number one you find in this week's Parshas Lech Lecha is that Hashem says to Avraham, I'm going to be your Mogen, I'm going to be your shield. In fact, in the Shemon Esrei itself, three times a day, the first bracha that's Makevis when it comes to Kavana, as Chaim points out, or Chaim Salvation points out, that you have to mechaven and have Kavanas, Hamilim and Kavana Bechlal, it ends off with Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham? Yeah, that's the theme, the basic theme that is contained in this specific bracha. And it's Makevis when it comes to the Shemona Esrei. What does the word Magen mean? So, besides meaning literally a shield, Chazal say it means even more than that. And what is that? That Hashem promised Klaius or something he didn't promise to any of the nation on the face of this earth. And that is Hashem will shield us and protect us from total destruction. That Klaius will be indestructible. He'll be our Magen, our shield, to prevent those machshavas ra'as of the nations of the world who over the centuries will try to commit genocide against the entire Jewish people. He's the Mogen, the shield, to prevent that phenomenon from taking place. So the first promise of the Bris Bein HaBesarim is the indestructibility of the Jewish people as a people. That doesn't mean we're not going to undergo all types of persecution, and millions of Jews, rachmel etzlam, might be lost over the generations, but us as a nation, as an entity, will be indestructible. There's no other nation on the face of this earth that was ever given that promise, and that's why most of the major maluchos, whether it's Greece, or Rome, or Persia, or Babylonia, don't exist, the chalal, on any level to this very day. The second promise, which is very important. If you remember in the narrative, if you go with the Pasha this week, do your Marva the Pasha, you'll find that Avram's star was promised by Hashem many promises, including progeny between him and Sarah Imenu. Avram questioned this, because Avram said, listen, Ribbono Shalom, you taught me how to analyze natural law. I'm looking around, and I'm looking at not only the physical natural law, I'm looking at the astrological phenomenon. And there's no way b'derech hateva that I and Sarah are going to have any children. So what kind of promise are you giving to me that our children will inherit us? We don't have any children together. So it says, Vayetze Avram Machutza. He took him outside and he showed him the stars, etc., etc. But Chazal tell us he didn't just take him to do stargazing. The Gemara in Shabbat says, Vayetze Avram Machutza. He told Avraham Avinu that you are right. B'derech HaTeva, you and Sarah don't have the capacity to have children. But what I want to reveal to you now is a special secret to you and the Jewish people, which I'm not mentioning to anybody else. And that is you and your mishpacha and Klal Yisrael in the future will not be limited to Derech HaTeva. You are going to live and survive and flourish and succeed because you're going to function on the level mechutz mi derech hateva. Chutz meaning chutz mi derech hateva. You are not bound by natural law. Your tainus to me on natural law are true, but you are going to supersede those inhibitions because I'm going to mishan teva for your success and Sarah's success and for Klaus's success in the future. The Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos on that pasuk, Mikan Shem Mazal Yisrael, that the concept of mazalos, the astrological phenomenon determining a person's lifespan and their wealthiness, how long they live, the hatzlacha they have with their children, all of that stuff which only depends upon mazal. Ein Mazal Yisrael, you are not bound by those type of limitations. The Gemara Shabbos in fact points out that Hashem even changed certain mazalot in Shemayim to facilitate Avram's capacity to reproduce together with Sarah Imenu. There's a whole narrative of there in Masechet Shabbos itself. And if that's the case, what the Rabbanu Shalom therefore said to Klal Yisrael through Avram and the Bris Bein HaBesarim is that Klal Yisrael and Avram as being part of Klal Yisrael are not going to be bound by the laws of natural law. We're not going to be bound by Teva. We're going to survive and succeed Shalei B'derech HaTeva, not only on a physical level, on a personal level, on a national level, but also when it comes to geopolitically. Whatever happens to you will always take place in the context that you'll do things Shalei B'derech HaTeva that none of the other nations on the face of this are capable of doing, and therefore that's a guarantee to you that don't feel you're limited by natural law on any level. You will conduct yourself Shalei B'derech HaTeva. Sarah and Avram having a child together itself is the beginning of the keem of that specific promise. But that's a historical phenomenon I'll demonstrate to you was an historical reality to this very day. And I'll show you when I give you proofs later on. So that's promise number two. Promise number three given to Klal Yisrael is the concept of the Matan of Eretz Yisrael. In this week's Parsha, Hashem talks about the Canaanite nations that inhabited Eretz Yisrael at the time of his talking to Avraham. And what he said to Avraham Avinu is that group of nations that live there now, they're not going to live there forever. Those nations are going to be displaced. Your children are going to come and inherit Eretz Yisrael as their specific legacy, their patrilineal legacy, their Yerusha, and their Marasha in generations to come. So the ultimate promise of the Kiyum, so scheme of Eretz HaKlal exclusively, was vouchsafed and promised in the Bris Bein HaBesara. Later on in Pashas Va'era, the term is used to show its eternal connection to Klal Yisrael, that it's not called a Yerusha, it's called a Marasha. Marasha means a heritage. And Chazal point out there are two things in the Torah that are called Marasha. One is Eretz Yisrael, and the other was Marasha Kilas Yaakov Torah. Both of them are called Marashas. And my Rebbe Soloveitchik said once, and I found that Rav Gifter also and others gave similar perushim, what's the chiluk between a Yerusha and a Marasha? It's a cute chap. He says, when you get a Yerusha, you get it. You can do whatever you want with it. Most people get the Yerusha and make sure that the next generation doesn't even know there was a Yerusha, which means basically it's theirs to use and to use up and to devour, etc., etc. That's considered an inheritance. What's a Marasha? Marasha is a different type of inheritance. It's a legacy, it's a heritage, which means you're going to receive it, you have right to use it, to be nana, have anah from it, but you must maintain its existence and make sure you preserve it to pass it over to the next generation. This applies to Torah, and this applies as well to Eretz Yisrael. We can't give Eretz Yisrael away. Once it's ours, and that's why when you had that whole problem by Tehran in Jewish history, the League of Nations, and later on, the UN wanted to split Eretz Yisrael and give it to the Arab world, and wanted, so many of the Gedolim were asked the question, are we ready for the sake of getting part of Eretz Yisrael to give part of it away? Many of the Gedolim said, we can't make that decision. We don't have a right to make that decision. It's not our Yerusha, it's a Marasha. And some fact, some sat down by Avelis when they heard that they were, that the Goyim were going to split the land and give parts of the land away. The stories about Rav Kook and Rav Chalap and others who really sat down by Avelis thinking of the thought that Eretz was going to be torn away asunder from us and parts are going to be given away. And that's why even when it came for land for peace later on that took place in our generation, many Gedolim says, we don't have the bailus to make such a commitment, and for that reason, they basically stayed out of the debate or opposed the concept in their various halachic position papers. So therefore, Eretz Yisrael being promised to us as an everlasting land for the Jewish people was already vouchsafed for Klal Yisrael as the third promise of the Bris Bein HaBesarim. Finally, the fourth major point of the Bris Bein HaBesarim is that there are no freebies when it comes to our spiritual and physical possessions in this world. To be zocha and have good things happen to you, you have to act in an appropriate way. And therefore, if you want to be zocha for what's called gula, for redemption, you have to be zocha to be have gula, redemption, applied to you. If we act in a rebellious way, and we act negatively against HaKadosh Baruch and his Torah v'mitzvahs, Hashem says, realize this, you're going to go into galus momentarily as a kapara. You're going to be denied the promises I mentioned in the Torah momentarily. So the concept of galus and gula being interchangeable and going from one to the other depending upon our spiritual worth is a major theme of the Bris Mein HaBesorim. Don't think that you have such divine nepotism for you that you're impervious to the way you behave and it makes no difference when it comes to your future existence. You've got to be worthy for Gula. Realize if you're not worthy, you're going to experience Gullus. Both of them are interchangeable and go back to one to another depending upon your matziv at that specific point in time. So these are the four distinct concepts mentioned in Bris Mein HaBesorim going back to the time of Parshas Lech Lecha. Now what I want to do tonight is show you that in actuality there are two major patterns of this Bris Mein HaBesorim that had major impacts upon Klal Yisrael throughout the generations, and in particular both of these patterns, as I'm soon going to show you, had all four elements I just mentioned in Bris Mein HaBesorim, and both patterns ultimately ended up with one major result of Klal Yisrael having the zuchus to go from Golus to Gula and to be able to enter Eretz Israel. Let me explain to you what I mean. And you can see very shortly, this is a pattern that is irrefutable. The two historical phenomena I'm referring to over here is the concept of Yetzias Mitzrayim and the Gula of Yetzias Mitzrayim, contrasting that to the Gullus and Gula that took place at the time of Purim in Persia in the historical time of the Nes of Purim. Listen very carefully. When it comes to the Yom Tov of Pesach, if you start reading the narrative of the Chumash and Sefer Shemos, you find that the narrative, in a very hidden way, of an Eschach Malo, when you look in the Midrashi Chazal and Ramban spells that out very explicitly, that the Torah starts off with a major, major supposition. That Paro, leading the Egyptian Empire, had in mind the final solution to get rid of the Jewish people. Hachan Eschach Malo. If he could have performed open genocide and started killing men, women, and children of Klal Yisrael to get rid of us because he was fearful of us and our power, he would have done such. But the Ramban points out he couldn't because people still remembered there was a Yosef. And people still remembered the bracha of Mitzrayim that cruised through Yaakov. So he couldn't do it. So he had to find a hidden agenda to commit genocide. His final plan was to speak to the Avraham Mialdos and tell them, get rid of all the Jewish baby boys. So at the end of the day, there are no Jewish men available. You'll have these Jewish girls. The only people who will be available for the marriage will be Egyptians. So I'll get rid of the Jewish people through that type of format. But it was a genocide decision. So the theme of Mitzrayim, the Gullus Mitzrayim, was the genocide of Klal Yisrael. At the end of the day, to Rabbi Isai, after knowing the narrative, did Paro and the Mitzrayim accomplish their genocide? The answer is no. No matter how many Jews they tried to kill and destroy, and were destroyed and killed in Egypt, Klal Yisrael survived. So the first promise of the Bris Mein HaBesorim, Hashem being the Magen to protect us as the people, of not being destroyed under the most unencourageable circumstances, we had the superpower in total control of us, and nevertheless, they weren't able to destroy us. The first promise of Mogain is seen very tangibly when it comes to the Gullus Mitzrayim. Number two, the fact of Shaloi B'derech HaTeva. If you think about the narrative of Yetzias Mitzrayim and all that took place, one of the most, I would say, singular phenomenon that should stick out in your mind is the fact that the Mitzrayim tried everything they possibly could do to break us, to destroy us, to diminish us, and to get rid of us. But what does the Torah say? Kashe yanu oso ken yibu yifrat. Which means, in a supernatural fashion, instead of us becoming less and less in number, the more they oppressed us, the bigger we became. You don't find any other nation in the face of this earth that ever were oppressed, that increased in their numbers, shisha b'kera secha, like you have happening in the Klal Yisrael. So our existence in Mitzrayim with all the persecution was a classic example of Shaloi B'derech HaTeva. When you add into that the Eser Makos, which by the time you finish the Agad, you realize it wasn't just Eser Makos, but there were many more Makos, all of the Makos were Shaloi B'derech HaTeva. And therefore, what do we see? The concept of Yotzeh Sa'achutza, that your existence and survival Bishaloi B'derech HaTeva, the paradigm example of that phenomenon is the events that took place in Egypt and our exodus from Egypt. All of that was Shaloi B'derech HaTeva. Hashem was Meshana the Teva to facilitate the Yeshua of Klal Yisrael. Open miracles, everybody was able to see. Even the Egyptians had to say after a while, Etz Belakimi. There's a hand of God here which we cannot duplicate and replicate or compete with. So the fact of the matter is, the whole backdrop of the Golas Mitzrayim and our redemption was a Shaloi B'derech HaTeva. Thirdly, what many people do not realize, and quite obviously, unfortunately, sometimes don't really take into consideration, is the fact that in Parshas Va'era, which continues the narrative of Parshas Shemos, you find what's called the famous Dalu Lashonis of Geula. But the only problem is they don't count sufficiently, because in the actual Parsha, it says also Vehevesi Eschem El Eretz Ashenasasi. There are actually six Lashonos of Geula. The ultimate result of Yetzias Mitzrayim, if in fact we would not have sinned with the Meragim, would have been that after we went from Mitzrayim to Hasinah to Makabel the Torah, we were then destined immediately to go into Eretz Israel. What prevented that from happening through Bechiras Chavshis was the Chet HaMaraglim that was stored there for 40 years. But in actuality, the actual purpose behind Yetzias Mitzrayim, as it says over here, is after the fall of Shonos of Geula, bringing it to Har Sinai, I'm then going to give you Vehaves V'Nesati, which should have taken place immediately. So there are actually six Shonos of Geula, not four. So we see therefore the promise of getting Eretz Yisrael, part of the Bris Mei Nebesarim, was part of the major motif of what Yetzias Mitzrayim was all about. Not only Kabbalah Satayrah, but the concept of Kabbalah Satayrah Yisrael was the major makkah bepatish of all the events of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So far I've shown you, when it came to the concept of Mitzrayim, there was the attempt for genocide which did not succeed, the miracles of our survival there, Shaloi B'derech HaTeva, the theme and the concept of ultimately being Yerush Eretz Yisrael, and therefore the promise of the Bris Mei Nesarim to be fulfilled. The concept of Golos V'Geula are likewise found by Chazal when it comes to the Mitzrayim Golos. In actuality, the reason we suffered Golos on the level we suffered in Mitzrayim was because we didn't listen to Yaakov and to Yosef. We left Eretz Goshen, and we went into the metropolis of Egypt. We started to live next to the Egyptians, assimilated, acculturated, most of Klal Yisrael mavat to the mitzvah of Bris Mila, which is the only major mitzvah we had that differentiated us between us and the non-Jewish world. So our assimilation, acculturation, sinking to mentor Sha'arei Tumah was really the cause of the intensity of the gullus that we were undergoing when it came to the Mitzrayim sojourn. If we would have stayed separate and been spiritually elite, the whole Mitzrayim episode would have been a different type of episode, Chazal point out. What did the Rabban Shalom do? He basically told Moshe and Klal Yisrael, At Erem Ve'Eriya, we say in the Haggadah Pasuk Yecheskel, I wanted to redeem you, but you were naked from mitzvahs. You were assimilated, acculturated. The Malachim started having kindness to me. Halava of Devar Zara, Halava Devar Zara. So what I had to do is give you the ability to do some spiritual merits to be Zachar for Geula. And what did he give us? He gave us two major mitzvahs to clean ourselves up. One, the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, because that was the ability for Klal Yisrael to show over a period of a couple of days our willingness to sacrifice our life in order to mavatal the Avodah Zarah of Egypt and to show public bittul Avodah Zarah of the Egyptian deity, the head deity of the empire. And that was the sheep, or the Shepsel and Shemayim, which was the astrological the sign of Zodiac at that point in time. The bittul Avodah Zarah, according to Chazal, was a major purpose of the mitzvah Korban Pesach. In fact, the Shabbos HaGadol, According to many Mefarshim, it has nothing to do with the length of the rabbi's drasha, as the jokes usually go. You know, Shabbos Gadol, they call it, it's a Shabbos Gadol, because when the Rav speaks, it looks like the Shabbos is longer than every other Shabbos. But that's not the Pshat, the Shabbos Gadol. Shabbos Gadol is that it was a tremendous ness. The Shem wanted the Jewish people, think about it, millions of people, that there should be on that day everybody running to the marketplace and everybody buying a sheep for their own house, parading with a sheep in the public in front of the Egyptians, and the Egyptians were then going to see us do such and ask us the obvious question, are you now starting to worship the sheep? Are you buying it as an idolatry? What are you doing? Are you making a pet? And Claudius were going to answer them, no, no. In a couple of days, we're going to have a party and make lamb chops. In order to show the Egyptians, we have no respect or covet for their deity. We're going to make a nice meal out of it. We're going to denigrate it, desecrate it. Chazal say, the Shabbos HaGadol was, that normally speaking, when a person hears their deity is going to be disgraced by somebody, they'll kill them. They'll destroy them. And Chazal say the Egyptians, after experiencing nine makas, were so fearful of the Jews.
You are listening to BensTorah.com.
They didn't want to touch a hair on their body, and instead, what did they do? They started to fight with Paro, get rid of them, because they heard the makas Becharis is on the way, and all the other nine makas already fulfilled what they said they're going to do. So there's a war that ensued, Chazal say, between the Becharim and the Paro's army. How many Becharim were killed at Shabbos because of this? But the miracle was that we were able to be Meisa Nefesh the night of Pesach. One of the reasons we could not eat the bones of the Korban Pesach, we had to put the blood of the Korban on the door, is to show the Egyptian neighbors we carry through. We ate the Korban Pesach, and to show you it's the Korban Pesach, the sheep, the skeletal structure was supposed to be untouched. When they threw the bones into the street, the people would see they actually ate these lambs. They carry through with their promise to desecrate. The Rambam has arichas upon this in Mar Nevuchim. This was a major kiddush Hashem, a bitul of a desara. So that kiddush Hashem was b'damai chayi number one. B'damai chayi number two, should we say, in the night in the Seder, was the bris milah. That they rectified the tikkun achet, the bitul bris milah, by being meisa nefesh 2-3 days before they left, even adults, to undergo circumcision, which in that environment was sakanas nefashos, hot, heat. I mean, nobody who's an adult would undergo normal circumcision, that part of the body, and go into that environment immediately. So that act of Mesiras Nefesh was the second B'damai Chayi. So we therefore see that we went from Golas to Gula because of Zuchuyot countering the Chovot. So the Golas Gula theme is likewise a major concept of the Nusach of the Haggadah itself. So therefore, when it comes to the Mitzrayim Gula and Golas, we therefore have the four themes of the Bris Bein HaBesorim taking place. The desire to commit genocide against us, which never reached fruition. Number two, our whole existence there under the Shibud and our ultimate redemption was Mechutz Miderach HaTeva, as I portrayed before. The ultimate Makkah B'Patish, or we were supposed to accomplish by leaving Mitzrayim, was not only Kabbalah Satorah, but in Pasha Fe'era, we're going to have, beside the four Lashons of Gula, Havesi V'Nasati, going directly into Eretz. So also the promise of the Bris, of us becoming the inheritors of Eretz Israel, was going to be fulfilled. And finally, the concept of Chayvas causing the Golos to be intensified, and Zechuyos allowing the Golos to become a Gula, all four themes of the Bris Bein HaBesorim are therefore portrayed what happened in the events in Mitzrayim. So we see the pattern of the Bris Bein HaBesorim being fulfilled in that specific narrative. If we skip a couple years and we come to the Yontif of Purim and the events of Purim led up to Purim, we find the same exact phenomenon. And let me explain to you very quickly what I mean. When it comes to Purim, the machshava of Haman and Achashverosh is not hidden in the Megillah. Their agenda was Lahashmel Abeg Eskola Yehudim. I mean, total destruction of every member of the Jewish people, not just the men, the women, the children, total genocide. At the end of the day, Rabbi say, after we finished the Megillah and that narrative, did that ever happen? No. Why? Because the Bris Bein HaBesorim promised that Hashem is going to be the Magen, and total genocide of Klal Yisrael is an impossibility. So the Purim showed a key, once again, of that part of the narrative of the Magen Avram phenomenon. When it comes to the events that took place during the Purim narrative, if you look very carefully in the Megillah, there's some subtle pieces that show that what happened over there was Shalom B'derech HaTeva. Now, let me explain to you what I mean. Number one, the choice of Esther Hamalka, for maybe thousands, maybe millions of women in the Persian Empire that were all collected against their will to become concubines in the palace of the king, and picking one of them ultimately as his queen, the statistical likelihood that a Jewish girl would be the final pick from all the various women that were collected to the palace of the king, statistically you could never ever bet upon that specific phenomenon. But the fact that she was picked, Badafka Esther, with her yichus and everything else as the Megillah plays out, so the fact is that alone is an esh shalei b'derech ha-teva, but it's concealed in a teva format, which people don't think about too much, but that was a pivotal part of the whole ness of the Purim event. Number two, the fact that Mordechai happened to be at the right place at the right time, and to hear two people conspiring to kill the king, and to be able to get this information over to the king and to save his life, and for this to be written in Sifrei Zichronos, which later on served as a way of making Mordechai the most favored Jew in the Persian Empire, and then having the zchus of Haman HaRasha lead him on a horse publicly and have a parade celebrating what he did, there's likelihood statistically that should happen in our voice is also something that's a nes shalei b'derech ha-teva, but it's concealed in natural law itself. The fact of the matter is that you have a monarch on the powerful level of Ahasuerus sealing a death decree against an entire nation, which means made the Jews helpless and their future hopeless, and then to have a napachu, that all of a sudden the Melech changes his mind, reverses the Gezerah, gives the ability for Mordechai and for Esther and all the people involved to literally have the ability to officially protect ourselves and to defend ourselves and to make this a real edict and such. In world history, you don't find Gezeros, Mevutal, and Napachu happening very, very often. All of these are representative, therefore, of Nisim Shalei B'derech HaTeva, whether physically, geopolitically, once again, a kiyum of one of the major promises of the Bris Bein HaBesarim. The ultimate Makkabah Patish of the Nes HaPurim was not just merely the survival of Klal Yisrael, but the fact that because it happened the way it happened, Daryavash was born, who happened to be the child of Ahasuerus and Esther, Daryavash number two. He's the one who gave the royal stamp of approval of the entire Persian Empire for the Jews to return to Eretz Israel and to rebuild the second base of Migdash and have the political clout of Persia and its support in order to accomplish this. That's why Chazal say, if you remember, we went to Mishnah Masechtas Midos in the Daf Yomi cycle, there was a special portrait of Persia on the Eastern Gate. And one of the Perishim over there, it's a way of Christ showing Hakaras Atov to the Persian Empire that we have a base of Migdash Hasheni. It's because of who? Because of the support of the Persian Empire. It's like flying the American flag in America. They were flying a portrait of the Persian Empire on their front gate of the base of Migdash to show Hakaras Atov. So if that's the case, Chazal say the purpose ultimately of the Purim miracle was not merely our salvation, but to begin the beginning of the Binyan Bayis Sheni and Klal Yisrael's Hakamas HaMedina the second time by Klal Yisrael coming to Eretz Yisrael Ezra Nechemya. So the concept of Eretz Yisrael's Yerusha was another facet of the Bris Bein HaBesarim being mekum with the Nes HaPurim. But what's interesting and fascinating is one more phenomenon, the Gullus and Geula. Many people don't take this in consideration, is the Gemara in Masechta Megillah has a whole narrative of Shimon Yochanan's Tamidim wondering how in the world did such a gzeirah of Gullus, where our entire nation is threatened with genocide, what chatoyim did we commit to accomplish this? So the Gemara has Hishtachlu L'Tzelem, they bow down to the various types of idols. The fact of the matter is that Klal Yisrael were not in a state of achdus. We used to fight with each other. We always Jews cannot live together. I mean, Haman used that as the tainit Ahasuerus. The Jews can't live with each other, so they're going to be a potential source of peace and help when it comes to the Persian Empire. So that was used against us. The animosity of Jews for each other was used as a form of getting Achashverosh to acquiesce to destroy us. But the most potent of them was Shenenu Mesuda Maisa Rasha. What does that mean? Chazal tell us that even though Achashverosh made sure that the meals were glatt kosher, and you had kosher wine, kosher food, separate facilities for the Jews. We didn't have to even mix in a party with the members of the Persian Empire. We just had to attend. And nevertheless, Chazal say, Mordechai said, don't go to this. What was Mordechai aware of? That this party that Achashverosh made had tremendous symbolic import. Chazal say Achashverosh had figured out incorrectly that the 70 years that was promised for Golas and Geula had already come and passed. And he came to the conclusion that the promise of the prophet of Israel, the Jews are going to be redeemed and go back to Israel to rebuild, was shavu batal. The purpose of this meal was to celebrate the bittul of that nevuah and to give the Jews the wake-up call, you ain't going back, guys, this is where you're stuck forever. To demonstrate this, what did they wear? He put on the begadim of the Kohen Gadol in order to show that that doesn't mean anything. I'm your Kohen Gadol now. Kalim and Kalim Shonim, they took out the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, and Bedafka, that was used as the Kalim with which to give to drink and to make merriment, and they should drink and eat and have fun, desecrating all the Kalim Mikdash to show, forget about the Mikdash, forget about Gula, forget about Eretz Israel. So a normal Jew who's sensitive to the promises of a Navi should have had a distaste or a nausea to want to partake of this meal. What does it say in the Chazal? Shenehenu Mesuda. Not only didn't bother them, but they had an awe, which means they acquiesced. They gave up on Gula, they gave up on redemption, they gave up on rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash. Chazal say those Averas Chamuris, all three of them, caused the concept of Golus and destruction to reach a tremendous height. What did Klal Yisrael do to change it from Golus to Gula? They had to have zechuyos. So what did Esther and Malka tell Mordechai do? Kenos kol ha-Yehudim. We got to have the Jews come together and make an achdus and literally forgive each other and show love and concern. Kish erev lev echad. We have to have avat chinam rather than sinas chinam. Number two is they got to fast. For the hanor they have from that suda, they have to show now that they realize they made a mistake. They shouldn't have eaten that suda. So the tikkun ha-tshuva is if you have hanor, you're fasting, you're abstaining from food, that's called the Tshuvas HaMishkel itself. Didn't bow down to idols anymore. I mean, all of this stuff was part and parcel of the Tikkunim, of the Zuhuyos, changing the Golus mode into a Geula mode. So once again, when it comes, Rabbi Yisai, to the Purim phenomenon, you have the four concepts of the Bris Bein HaBesarim literally taking place in front of your eyes. The theme of indestructibility, which is portrayed. Number two, the Nisim of Shalei B'derech HaTeva taking place in a hidden way, but taking place. Number three, the concept of ultimate Yerushin Yeshiva Eretz Israel. And number four, the Golus and Geula theme based upon Zechuyot HaChovo taking place. You therefore have the historical pattern of the promises of Bris Bein HaBesarim taking place on Purim the same way they were the theme that took place on the Yom Tov of Pesach. But the difference between these two periods of time is crucial and critical. And this Chazal make a big deal of. Where the miracles of the Bris Bein HaBesarim on Pesach were Nisim Shaloi B'derech HaTeva that were galui, were open and revealed, everybody could see them, B'shas Maisa, and they were orchestrated exclusively by the Rebbeinu Shem B'chvodo B'atzmo. It says in the Megillah, I did it myself, which means I did it myself. That Jews were not allowed to participate in orchestrating the actual Makkos itself. Hashem says, I'm going to do it. You're going to be passive. Kriyas Yamsuf could only be accomplished by the Rabbeinu Shalom. He might have jumped in, but he had to split the sea. The miracles of the Mon, of the Bermayim, and Ananiya covered ultimately the concepts of our ability to have Matan HaSinai with all those miracles, Shlo B'derech HaTeva. Hashem was doing all of this by himself. That is called by Chazal a geula based upon the Bris Bein HaBesarim in which we have the zuchuyot, spiritual merit, behind us. If that's the type of geula we're undergoing with the promise of Bris Bein HaBesarim, things are always shaloi b'derech hateva, supernatural in nature. When it comes to Purim, however, Chazal point out there the motif was totally different. There, everything, because of Klal Yisrael's chayvos they collected over time, we really were not worthy of redemption the way we should have been worthy of redemption. We should have been chay b'klibi, and in fact, that's why the gzeirah was worse than the gzeirah of Mitzrayim. By Mitzrayim, the only gzeir on the Zaharim, not the Nekevas. By Purim, they were gzeir on the Nekevas, on the Zaharim, on the children, total annihilation. The reason was because the chayvos had reached such a level that literally it was impossible normally for us to escape. So the fact of the matter is, Hashem, because of the promise of Klal Yisrael's Nitzchias and the promise of never to be eradicated, performed miracles, Shalei B'Derech HaTeva, but they were concealed in Derech HaTeva, in natural law. It's only in retrospect we were able to see the miracle that took place when we started analyzing the events and putting all the pieces together. When you read the entire Megillah,
you see
in retrospect, then you see that's why Hashem's name is never mentioned explicitly in the Megillah. The Hamelech they claim on top of these, I have on top of Megillah, is Maram is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but nevertheless, everything was Shalei B'Derech HaTeva, but in a concealed way, in a Hester by the way. And therefore, there's one other factor. The miracles that took place by Purim had one other feature. Not only was it Shalei B'Derech HaTeva, but Derech Nister, but also needed the Rishio and the permission of the Malchus of that time to help us facilitate our redemption. It's only because Persia turned around and we now had a friendly monarch to support our plea to save us and to allow us to return to Eretz Yisrael and to get back to Eretz Yisrael, the Yavish number two, who's the baby of Esther Malka and Achashverosh, because we had a friend in the palace over here, that Rishi and Hamalchus was the facilitator for that redemptive process to take place, giving us Vayasheni, and therefore Rishi and Hamalchus is an example of a gula shelo zachu, which means to say, in a very simple way, the bris bein habesaron and the promises of Klal Yisrael, ultimate existence, redemption, have two formats. If we're spiritually worthy, and we are having nisim shelo b'derech hateva, where Hashem's doing it, that's the Mitzrayim type of gula. If we're not worthy, but Hashem made a promise, and He has to keep the promise nevertheless, there we have a gula rabbeisai shelo zachu. But it's done in a hestaponim format, where the Baruch Hashem is doing it, but we have to be mishtagel, b'derech hateva, we have to be proactive to use political clout of the Malchus of that time and solicit their help in order to accomplish that redemption to take place. Chazal point out both dimensions of both of these formats are modeled after the Bris Bein HaBesarim. They have all the four elements contained inside, and nevertheless, what's the halacha? At the end of the day, the promises are kept, and the ultimate promise of returning to Eretz Yisrael and ultimate redemption are guaranteed based upon it. If I skip for a couple minutes and go now to our contemporary period of time, I want to give you a very interesting ha'ara. And that is from the 1100s and 1200s on, when the Rishonim and later on the Achronim cleared Chakiros, what is the ultimate redemption going to look like? So going back to the time of the Ramban, the Radak of that Tekufa, they looked in the world and they said, you know something? The only type of redemption we can see is a Purim type of redemption of Nes Nista taking place, Marishin Hamalchios. Too many Jews have assimilated and acculturated in the big world at large. How many Jews are still Shemitah of the Mitzvahs? So they forecast in their minds that somehow, some way, the miracle of redemption will be Barishin Amalchus, which means a Purim type of redemption rather than that of a Pesach type. If I skip to the 16th, 1700s and go to the time of the Vilna Gaon, the Talmid, the Master Vilna Gaon Rebbe, what type of redemption is it going to be? And the Vilna Gaon, in one of his famous Mamarim, of which he dictated to his Talmidim to write down, called the Dictum of the Kol Hatar, he said this is going to be a Gula of Rishi and Hamalchus, which means a gula shelo zachu. In fact, his Talmidim said, Rebbe, who's going to lead this gula back to Eretz Yisrael? And he says, in his mind, based upon Zohar literature, it's going to be the Rashaim of Klal Yisrael, the anti-Jewish, the anti-Torah Jews, which he called the Bnei Banav of the Erev, who are going to lead us back. The Nishfruma are going to lead the movement to return to Eretz Yisrael. And he also said to them that we have to be proactive, we have to go back and start settling the land and building it, and use our power with Rishon HaMalchus to cause the return to take place. So this was the Gaon's perception. The fact of the matter is the Gaon gave this over the Kabbalah to his Tamidim. One of his most foremost Tamidim was Rav Chaim Volozhin, who ultimately founded the Volozhin Yeshiva. We find later on that the last Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin, which was the Netziv, was a major advocate, and in his time, he was telling everybody that what's happening now, when it comes to the Jews returning to Eretz, so the Netziv says, is that Rabbeinu Lishlom controlling the heartstrings of the Tsar of Russia and all his things. We're collecting money for Eretz Israel, we're rebuilding Eretz Israel, we're sending money, supplies, and people there. And the Tsar and the government, which are anti-Semitic, are letting it happen, nobody's stopping us. It's only because the Rabbeinu Lishlom wants this phenomenon to take place. There's a Rishi in Hamalchus, whether they like it or not, that's allowing and facilitating this. And he urged at that time all the Jews, especially all the Gedolim, should be protagonists and therefore participate in what's going on and urge people to do. But the fact of the matter is the real tekufa, that you really see the Brisbane Abbasurim taking place in its totality, was the many times what I mentioned to you, the Balfour Declaration 1917, and later on the League of Nations in 1922, we now have an actual Rishi and Hamalchus of the Gayusha world coming together and saying we're going to help the Jews with their solicitation of us to return to Eretz Yisrael to rebuild their specific Jewish homeland. You have, Rabbi Sai, the biggest attempt to destroy us taking place right at that time. What is that? The Holocaust. The purpose of the Holocaust was literally the biggest attempt to eradicate all of the Jewish people. Did they succeed? No. Ultimately, Nazi Germany was eradicated, but the Jews somehow miraculously survived. Diminished the numbers, but we weren't eradicated the way that the final solution of Yimach Shemo V'Zichro, him and his Arab cohorts, planned to do. Number two, the miracles that took place, ultimately speaking, when it comes to Hakamas Medina, one of the biggest miracles, besides the fact that the votes took place and gave us the majority, which nobody ever expected to happen, and that Russia and America voted on the same side of the aisle to have Eretz Yisrael given back to the Jewish people, but the War of Independence. We had the whole Arab world armed with all the weaponry you can possibly have against a Jewish army that didn't even exist yet. We didn't have tanks, we didn't have planes, we didn't have the equipment they had. We were outnumbered, and the amount of weaponry that was placed against us was simply impossible to even believe that we can overpower them. The Ness of Hanukkah is put down and compared to the Ness of the War of Independence. Because what was thrown against us in the War of Independence is much more than was thrown against us when it came to the Hanukkah confrontation. And the fact of the matter is, in two years, they begged us for an armistice. So you have, as Rav Soloveitchik says, the Ness of Rabbi Miad Miatim taking place in our generation. That's a Shloi B'derech HaTeva, but it's concealed, you know, in a very special way, in a B'derech HaTeva format, even though logically it doesn't make sense. Later on, we have the Six-Day War taking place. What country has a Six-Day War? Once again, you have a concealed phenomenon of Shloi B'derech HaTeva taking place in a concealed format by the Rabbeinu Shalom. Ultimately, what happened when it came to the Hakamas Medina is the return of Klal Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael, which for 70 years has grown and succeeded in its ability to survive and thrive, and on every level possible you possibly can think, even though B'derech HaTeva should be impossible. The fact of the matter is we went from a Golus mode to a Geula mode. And the fact of the matter is, Chazal tell us, one of the reasons is, look at the growth of Torah in Eretz Yisrael compared to the way Torah was learned in Eretz Yisrael for thousands of years. Barwan once made a cheshbon in mind, numerically, that in world Jewish history there were never so many people learning in Eretz Yisrael at one point, at one time, one place. When you calculate all the men in yeshivas and all the women in seminaries and everybody learning there, you never had such an assemblage of people learning Torah, and each day more Balei Tshuva coming aboard. We're living in a tekufa where we're going from Golus to Geula, because of the fact that Sofia Salasa Shuva, Klai slowly but surely, are returning. Those who don't want to participate in the process, if you think about it, are all making Yerida. You know, they're now in New York City or California opening up pizza shops or whatever it is, or other types of businesses, but they're not staying in Eretz Yisrael. They're running to India, they're running here, they're running there. The ones who are staying in Eretz Yisrael are the Shomer Shabbos Jews. The fact of the matter is, of Kuk Rav Chassam Sofer once said, why is it the Torah says the Lashon Vatoki Eretz Esyashvecha? It's a very funny expression. I mean, there are many words you can use to interpret kicking us out of Eretz Yisrael. The Magarash us, they'll throw us out. What's Vatoki? It's going to vomit us out. So the Chassam Sofer says at the end of time, you know what's going to happen? People who are not Shema Tovah B'mitzvahs are going to develop a nausea for Eretz Yisrael. I don't want it. I can't stand being there. What's the purpose of being there? They're going to become disillusioned. What do I need this land for? I'd rather be in America. I'd rather be in India. Right? So the land itself will be something that's nauseous for them, something that's uncomfortable for them, and they're going to leave on their own accord. They'll develop a dislike for it. So who's staying in Eretz Yisrael? Only people who have a kesher to Eretz Yisrael. You know, people who have a kesher to Torah, people know that it's our patrimony, they're the ones who are staying there. This is all orchestrated quietly behind the scenes by the Rabbi Neshalem. But the biggest, I would say, of all the Nisim of our time over here, so even though we see the destruction of Klal Yisrael wasn't accomplished, even though that was the purpose of the Holocaust and Eretz Yisrael's schus kim of its existence and its ability to build itself, is also part of the concept of the Magen of Hashem, Shalei B'Derech HaTeva, the way we grow, the way we supply ourselves, the way we're able to, quite obviously, run the economy over there. I mean, you sometimes wonder, how does Eretz Yisrael run itself? Because everything in Eretz Yisrael should not be functioning. The government can't function. We don't even have a government. And despite the fact there's no normal government and everything, everybody's on everybody's throat, the land is flourishing and the land is going forth and things are being built over there. I mean, I never know, I was never in Eretz, anytime I come, that there isn't building taking place. Every place there's building, there's expansion taking place. And the fact of the matter is, one of the biggest miracles of our time, which Rav Kasha mentions, is he says, if you want to have a conviction that the oaths of the Gemara and Ksub is no longer applicable, he says, what do the oaths say? Which the Satmar Rebbe used as the major discipline to say that our taking over the land before the Mashiach comes was Shalaika Halacha, Shalaika Hashkafa, and if it's an illegal entry, he made a whole, his whole peace is predicated upon those oaths. The only problem is those oaths, as everybody points out, were never brought down Halacha L'masa by any of the Gedolei HaRishonim and any of their compendiums as definitive. And according to Ramei Simcha Davinsky, it's very simple, he is, but that's not the way we return to Eretz Yisrael. We return Barishi and Hamalchus. Started with Britain, and then it went to the League of Nations, finally with the UN vote. We went back with the permission of the Umas Olam, not with, you know, Yalla Bechema. All the wars we had in Eretz Yisrael since we came back were wars of self-defense, not offensive capturing the land. That's not considered Yalla Bechema or Bimaret. So the fact of the matter is, says Rav Kasha, if you want to see the total bittul of these shvuos, im taru es avashatech pots. So the lashon he uses, and I'll end with this tonight, and when I think about it, it really is pelvic. He says, if you want to see the fact that these shvuos no longer exist, so Rav Kasha says, let me quote you the medrash I found that nobody knows of. He says, what's the pshat im taru es avashatech pots? Shahamalchios when the nations of the world will give you the military equipment in your hands. And what's going to be this? That the Umas Olam will give us the permission and the ability to defend ourselves and give us the weaponry we need to be able to defend ourselves and protect the Jewish people against any harm. When you see that happening, that's a siman, he says, that the Mashiach is around the corner and that the Gula is very close, and that any oaths that you claim prohibited us from returning are totally shovel butter. There was never in world history any statement about the power of the Jews ever mentioned in any book. We always looked upon as, you know, the downtrodden Jew. All of a sudden, this year, it comes out in one of the major, major world journals on military strength and power that Eretz Yisrael is now numbered as either number 7 or 8 most powerful country on the face of this earth when it comes to military might. It's the first time we have in world history this accentuated. We're a major military. We have hundreds of nations. We're number 7 and 8 in the laundry list over here. And the fact of the matter is that you have now Egypt and Saudi Arabia, some of all our big, Jordan, all the great Sunni Israel, relying upon the military might of Israel to defend them against Iran and all the other crazy enemies of the Arab world, they're killing each other. If you talk about a napahu, you can't find a bigger napahu than what's happening over here. Just want to end with one statement that I heard from Malcolm Honlein this past Rosh Hashanah when I was in the hotel with him. He was the political scholar in residence. I was the Torah scholar in residence. So one of his sessions, he said to the people, he said, I want you to know something. I don't care whether you love Trump or don't love Trump, you like him, you don't like him, but the fact of the matter is, I've been in this business a long time. And yes, he's been the president of the... He says, I want to tell you historically, we have never had a presidency and an American government as behind the land of Eretz Israel and the Jews on the level that we have since Trump became president. Whether you like the man or not, he has formed a bond and a protective link and a connection with us and given us what we wanted on such a level that it's imaginable, unimaginable that this could ever happen. But one thing I want to forewarn you, that's only going to continue if a Republican administration stays in place. If God forbid our great Jewish brethren, our great liberals, think that replacing them with a Democratic Party is going to bring salvation and peace and harmony to the Jewish people, they're out of their cotton picker minds. Because the first thing the Democrats are ready to do, this is not the Democratic Party of my boobies and Zaydens. This is the Democratic Party of the left liberals who in their mind, anti-Semitism is their agenda. If they, God forbid, become in charge of the political bureaus of Washington, D.C., Rahmanul Litzlan, I don't even want to contemplate what's going to happen when it comes to the American-Israel relationship. So the fact of the matter is, he wanted to urge the audience, don't vote based upon whether you like Trump or don't like Trump, based upon the reality that the Republican Party is your friend now, and the enemies are the Democrats. It used to be the opposite many years ago. Ironically, Napahu, even that's undergone a Napahu, Rabbi Isai. The Brisbane Abbasarim is our guarantee. We're experiencing the Brisbane Abbasarim in our generation in the Gula Shel Azacha with Rishi and Hamalchios. Let's help and pay Yoshana Bab Yushlaim Habanui and realize this Pasha is the Pasha that's the source of the Haftachos of Nisich Zekal Yisrael, Yoshana Bab Yushlaim Habanui. We should get the shul ready to uproot itself and move to itself, but maybe it may not.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.